By the way, while you just get your coffee and cookies, and I'll just get started here. If you don't have, let me put it this way, you can have your own donor advised fund for the charity, for your ministry. We have a lot of ministries that set up their own fund, okay? And where did he go? Where is he? Alan Dimmitt, okay, if you know Alan. There he is, yeah. He has one. They have one for their charity. And so what you can do is... Right, yeah, you're there for the donors to gift into. And so a lot of people will set up a single charity fund for the ministry, and what's cool about that is you can have a place, a DAF for yourself, that if somebody wants to give an asset or anything else, they can give it there. It could be a signatory DAF, and they can then have, we do all the work for them and for you, and it basically becomes like they've done. If you want an endowment, you can run your endowment funds through that. Okay, because it's going to be invested well. You're going to earn a good return. The other thing is it's off your 990, so it's not on your books, and so it's really good for your accounting side of the ledger. And a lot of times your donors, if you're trying to raise money for an endowment, some believe in endowment and some don't, okay? And so if you ended up having a $50 million endowment, what do some people think? You don't need any of my money, right? Well, you're wrong, right? We need a lot more, right? And so that's a really good way to set up an endowment fund that allows you to take in all of these assets. The other thing it does is you're going to get one return at the end of the year, and you don't have to chase down all the paperwork, all the accounting. We do all that for you. Okay, so that's an option if you're interested in setting that up. I would encourage everybody to do that. So all of our, and just for total transparency. If you go on our website, thesignatory.com, and you look at fees, it still lists fees, okay, because we publicly are going to take this out to the market in the third quarter of 22, but we haven't charged our donors since April of last year, nor do any donor advised funds that we set up today that we don't charge them a fee. The reason why we haven't gotten off our website is because all this work we're doing with He Gets Us, and we're buying media at the tune. This is a $1 billion campaign, by the way, over the next 3 years. We'll spend $130 million this year on media buy for the cause of Christ. Next year, it'll triple that. So you need to get in that window. And here's the other thing. We're going to offer up opportunities for every ministry that wants to partner with us. Let me ask it this way. Let me frame it this way. How many of you, at the end of the day, your number one cause is not only to provide a great place for these kids to live and thrive, but you want them to go to heaven? At the end of the day, it's all about souls in heaven, right? And so the campaign He Gets Us, we're going to structure this in order to have all the churches in America that want to participate, we're going to basically be providing the cost of the campaign at the tune of $1 billion. So think about having a campaign, $1 billion, and you can point your donors to say, we're a part of this and we're raising money, and this is going to allow us to tap into a new opportunity to raise money. It's an incredible idea, and we're going to do a co-op with churches and ministries around the country so that you can say, go to the website and you can say, we're a part of this, and you can raise money for your organization through this effort. And then we'll co-op with you on how, probably at a 70-30 split is what we're probably going to do, which is a great deal for every ministry and every church, because no one else is going to do this. They just can't afford to do it, right? Who can spend $1 billion? And so we've got half of that already raised, okay? So you can set up your own single charity fund if you want to do that. Let me know if you can reach out to me, and that takes 15 minutes. You can do it online, but it provides you a tool for your ministry for people to give to, okay? All right, let me finish where I was, and I'm going to jump to thank you for being here for me. Y'all give him a hand. This guy's done, he's done a lot of work. And also, where's Chuck? Chuck in the back. Y'all know, he's done, this goes months back, preparing and sending emails and following up and taking care of everything. Thank Chuck. I want to thank Chuck. Thank you, Chuck. So, no, I couldn't wait to get here. I was really looking forward to this. The only thing that I haven't seen is James Moore, and I wanted to see James while I was down here. So, is he going to be here today?
Come to the tour tonight.
I'll be on a plane, Chuck. A picture. I got a vision. I got a memory of James. That'll have to work. All right.
James is a newlywed.
He ain't looking for me. That's right. That's right. So, do these questions make sense to you guys? Was this ringing true to you? This means yes. Let me see some nods. Okay. How's your family doing, et cetera? Do the goals of your plan match with your estate? What is your plan for your business? What's the succession? This one right here would be one I would ask every donor, every person that owns a business. You know, what is the plan for your business? What's your succession plan? Are you going to sell? Are you going to transfer it to your children, et cetera? And are they capable of running the business? And when you think about inheritances, and so we do a lot of work in family legacy space. You know, people like to gift in like, if you got three kids, we'll just split up a third, a third, and a third, right? But if you look at Scripture, it's not how it was done in Scripture. And I could tell you more about that, because not every kid's the same. You may disagree with that, and that's cool. But there's a lot of teaching around that as well. And how do you do it if one can run the business and the other two don't care anything about it? You see what I'm saying? There's a lot of ways to look at all this stuff. And so it might change the way you think about a few things. So what are you looking for? These are the people you're looking for, okay? Specifically, business owner, 20-plus employees, and growing. And what does growing mean? That's what you're looking for are revenues. How much are your revenues growing on an annual basis, okay? And that's the kind of thing that if you can find that out, it's enormously important. They then become qualified to do a lot of good things that can save them a lot of taxes. They can give a lot more money. Long-term ownership. I mentioned yesterday about the two brothers in New York that built parts for Cummins engines, diesel engines. They built it for 25 years, sold it for $100+ million, and gifted $32 million, 16 apiece, to their donor advised fund. And when I asked them the question, I'm like, well, what are you passionate about? What are y'all going to give this to? Well, there's a couple of things that we kind of like, but we really don't have any passions. Can you imagine $32 million sitting in a donor advised fund, and they ask us, well, what do you think? Guess what? We get that question. And good news for y'all, we've built our own software enterprise platform to run on. Okay? We switched over to it last June. And on that platform, within the second iteration of this, will probably be in 6 months or so, you will be able to come on, and we've got categories of things, because our vision is to solve some of the world's greatest problems, children as being one of them. And we will classify all of the ministries under, whether it's water ministries, translation ministries, adoption ministries, you see what I'm saying? And we vet those for efficiency and effectiveness. And from there, if you want to put your campaign up on our website and expose what you're doing to all of our donors, you have access to do it. No one else has anything like that, okay? So it's another place that you can expose what you're doing to some of the wealthiest, generous people in the country. And so love for you to be able to have access to that. But long-term ownership is really important to try and find out technology, healthcare, manufacturing, and engineering. These are the sectors that you want to kind of look for. So if you write these down or take a picture, and you go back and you say, okay, we're going to take our database and we're going to figure out who has a 20 plus employees, who has long-term ownership, who has technology, healthcare, manufacturing, or engineering sector. Those are really good to work in. Those spaces are really good for making big gifts, okay, and asset gifts. And then real estate, developers, and commercial property. Unbelievable. Incredible. I had a developer call me this morning, and he's doing in different parts of the country. Last year, he made $60 million profit. Okay, he had a good year. And he's like, how can I save some taxes this year? And the reality is he's actually just going to gift. So you remember the number, how much can you give against your adjusted gross income? What was that number? 30%. So 30%, he's got $18 million that he can gift, and it doesn't have to be cash. Okay, so he can keep his cash liquid and put it somewhere else. So he's going to gift a piece of property that he's owned for a long time that's worth about $20 million that's generating revenue. And then that revenue will then start funding some of his, it's almost like his own endowment to give. And I'm like, you can let your kids use that. You can give it, you know, it's going to be there forever as long as you got tenants paying rent. And most of the time we don't think about those places like that. I shared with you yesterday the Museum of the Bible and the building that sits adjacent to it, okay? It was bought at 20 cents on the dollar, and then it was leased up. They got a fair market value deduction for a lot, okay, and paid a little bit of money for it, and then they filled it up with renters, and now that money flows through their DAF right back to fund the Museum of the Bible, okay? And so it's ongoing. It's a flywheel effect that it's just incredible. Okay, so those are the sectors, the real estate stuff. Again, where that works so well is people have so much real estate there, even farmland, oil leases. Okay, if you know somebody, you got a lot of Texas people that are here, they can gift their oil leases. Okay, and if you know songwriters, etc. Okay, a lot of times they can gift their catalog of inventory. Okay, and get a deduction for that. All right, multiple ownership. Okay, so if they own not just one business, but several businesses, all right? That's the page that you need to know of and to go and take your donor base and spend some time and research that, okay? And then if you're like, okay, I got 15 people that qualify, then call me and say, I've got 15 people. Will you jump on the phone with us? The answer is yes. We would absolutely jump on the phone, and there's, you know, that's what we do, okay? So that's how this works. Donating non-cash real estate and business interest. So the real estate, closely held businesses, these are all the things that kind of come. They can gift real estate, closely held business shares, all or part of it. So you don't have to give. Some people think, well, you know, I got to give the whole thing. No, they can give any percentage of that fits against their adjusted gross income, okay? And then they can multiply that times 5 because they got 5 more tax years they can run it out. So that's kind of where we get back to the number that we're looking for, okay? Income tax driven. So the cool thing about it is they don't have to sell a business. These people there's a lot of people making a lot of money. And every year, I just had somebody tell me, who was it? He's from Alabama. Where'd he go? There you are. And they call you at the end of the year, and what do they tell you?
What do you need?
Because?
You've got to reduce your tax
budget. Mm-hmm. And so what do they do? From
the company,
right? Not personal. So what does that tell you? What that tells me is, okay, that business is held probably as a C corp. It's a flow through, all right. And so they're going to take whatever. So they're going to be paying taxes on all the income that flows through there, and so they're going to lighten that load a little bit and pay less. So they're going to write that 100% off. Now, what could they do differently? They could simply have a phone call. We could find out about what their plans are, and have a long term conversation about a massive gift. Now, let me just say this: the average gift that we get is at a minimum of $500,000. How many of you could use one $500,000 gift next year? Just one. Does that change things? Probably. And so that's where it typically starts, okay? Because the numbers start working in the $300,000-$500,000 range. And so if people are interested in a business and they can save taxes, they're like, well, I want to save as much as I can. So typically it's $500,000 is the minimum gift that we're going to receive. Okay, so that's kind of what you can look at. It's 10 times larger than they gift when they give cash. So if they're giving you 50 grand a year, they probably could make an asset gift of 500,000. Okay? but it's very much income tax driven. So all those business owners, they've got an issue every year. Okay? So you want to get to them before the end of this year. So, right? So they can do that. One last thing on when they're given as it relates to their income tax, a question they may ask you is, well, if I gift it this year, when do I have to have the valuation done, or when do I have to have it appraised, right? So there's got to be an appraisal on that property. You don't have to have it appraised before it's given. You have to have it appraised before the next tax filing. Okay, so depending on what part of the year, so that you can say there's plenty of time to do that. Okay, so it doesn't have to happen prior to, but they got the next year. So a lot of times people are like, well, I don't have time to do it because it's tax time, and I need gift it. We'll figure that out down the road. So that's good to know. So these are the two pieces: income tax that cause opportunity, and then point of sale, and then key benefits obviously are income tax reduction and capital gains reduction, okay? Publicly traded stock, you guys know about that. Look at donors who made year-end gifts. So what are you looking for in your database? You need to find people who have made gifts year-end. Note them for a special follow-up, okay? And that follow-up, so at year-end, if you get all those people that gave stock, you want to go back to them, because sometimes they'll even gift that stock they'll sell the stock and then give the money. And you need to know, because they've just lost out on all those cap gains, right? All right, so they should have gifted the stock, then they can save the taxes. But if they've done that, there's more there. The question is, what else is there? Okay, it's like layers. You want to find, that's an open opportunity. Know who they are. Look at donors who made publicly traded stock gifts and note for follow-up. Okay, from 2010 to 2015, Russell James study said nonprofits relying on cash, 11%. Nonprofits with any non-cash gift is 50%. So there's some non-cash gift happening. Nonprofits with securities is 66% growth. So there's more people giving these assets than there were in the past. Okay, and so it's becoming more aware. Thank goodness. Okay, so that's a little bit there. If a business is selling real estate, they face the greatest tax consequences they ever have. They need help. Now, how many of you guys have asked for money? Sat down face-to-face, asked for money. All right, when you show up and you ask for money, what do you think the donor is thinking? Let me see if I can say this right. When you come, do they know why you're coming?
Yes.
Okay? Do you go see them when other times when you're not asking for money? Okay, good. So these are the kind of questions you want to ask then. But when you do come, they know you're there to do what? Ask for money. Okay? What if you could turn the tables? And this is one of the beautiful things about understanding some of this. Because if they go to see their CPA or their attorney, what are they expecting? Counsel, right? They like to go see their CPA and their attorney if they have a problem, don't they? Because they need counsel. They need knowledge. They need information. So what ends up happening is when you show up and Mr. Donor's here and you pull the chair up, this idea of bringing some information that helps them save taxes, to give more money, you are now being received and viewed differently by the donor. Can you see that? Okay? And you don't have to be a CPA and don't act like you're a CPA. Matter of fact, the first thing I tell our donors is, number one, I'm not a CPA. Okay. Number two, I'm not an attorney. But I work with attorneys and CPAs every day, and we work with theirs. So as quickly as we can get their CPA in the conversation and their attorneys, we want them in the conversation because we don't want them goofing the deal up, all right? And we want to engage them and educate them. So one of the things that can happen if you start having some of these conversations where you take those questions and you go say, let's go have lunch. I got some questions I want to ask you. Okay? And you sit down and you start asking them these questions. And you can point them in the direction of saying, I've got some information for you that might save you some time. Now they're going to see you as bringing information, not just asking for money. Does that make sense? It's a pretty big deal. All right? And they're going to start seeing you as somebody that offers something of real value to them. But they face the greatest tax consequences they're ever going to face when they're selling these when they're selling real estate or a business. But they must give before the purchase agreement is signed. Did y'all get that one? I've said it a couple of times. They have to give it away before the purchase agreement is signed. And the last one is, friends don't let friends sell businesses without knowing this information, okay? So here's a framing question for you. What activities can your organization undertake to identify major gift prospects and complete major gifts on behalf of the organization? What activities can you take? Number one, you need to know the sector, identification, right? Who are they? What are the questions to ask of them? And if you don't get all of those and you just stop at number one, all you have to do is get a list and then say, let's have a conversation. I can ask those questions, okay? Depending on how much of that you want to do, how comfortable you are doing that. But if you called and says, hey, I've got 10 people, they own this, it's a C corporation or an S corp, they're doing $50 million in business a year, they have no debt on the property, blah, blah, blah. Those are the kind, if once we learn that and they have an interest in saving some taxes, we're so far down the road, it's this simple. Once that happens and we have that first conversation, then they get a gift intake form from us, okay, which asks all the questions about their business so that we can do our due diligence. So our due diligence finds out everything we need to know as if we were buying that piece of real estate or that business. So we do that, and then once that's done, we have a conversation with their CPA, their attorney, and them and ours, okay? And then they come together and get on the same page about how much, how this is going to happen, when's it going to happen, et cetera, okay? For instance, I went to a luncheon in Dallas that some friends of ACU put together, and the largest cattle guy, I don't know, they have more heads of cows that get slaughtered every year, big, big cattle deal in Dallas. He came, and at the end of the day of our meeting, he's like, you know, my son and I own a bunch of other properties, and we've got about four or five different LLCs, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I'd be interested because we've never done this. Can you help us? Yeah, so we'll take a look. I was like, how about just sending me your balance sheet? So that afternoon, he sent me his whole balance sheet. I knew everything about all of his wealth. Now, there has to be a level of trust there to do that, right? Or I've got something of value that he's willing to share that information, right? So he sends it, and we made recommendation then as to which asset was the best one to give that had the most tax consequences. So you don't have to do that, but that's how it works in a meeting or two. So let's say, for instance, you're like, I've got 10 people or 5 people, and you wanted to bring them together, and we had a conversation. And you want to bring them together, we can come visit with you and have a conversation over a dinner or a salon kind of event where you bring those people and we share information, and if that something happens, fantastic, okay? So there's a lot of options that are here, okay? And we've got people all over the country that kind of do this kind of work that can help you. So those are some of the things. Know what to ask, identify, know what to ask, and then start the conversation with either us or them. So assessing major donor efforts. Who typically participates in major donor efforts? Major donors, right? But who are they? What do they have? What, again, back to the question about how well do you know your donors? Can we identify our top 10 major donors and who they are? How many of you know, on top of your head, your top five donors? By name, okay? And now, do you know what their business is? Do you know how much revenue they do? See, that's where it typically stops. We know what the business is, and that's it. And here's the fear. They think you don't want to get up in their business, right? But they want to tell you. I can tell you, they want to share that information if you approach it the right way. Okay? They will be more than happy to share that. You need to start asking that question. Who are the potential major donor prospects? We talked about the sectors they are. What kind of events, gatherings, or meetings can you do? So one of the things you can do is bring them together. How many of you brought together people to hear about an estate planning, right, session? Y'all ever done that? You can do the same thing around asset-based giving, okay? Or you can plug in and jump online and grab, if I've got a couple of brochures here, all this stuff you can get a hold of online from us, like how to give from all resources, okay? Or this one that talks about for enduring families. So there's a lot of, you can pick these up if you want to get them before I leave. There's a lot of resources online that we have, okay? And a lot of types of events you can have. I would encourage you, if you want to bring some people to the Day with David Green meetings, get on the list. Those fill up really quickly. We're looking for the same thing you are there to take out there to him. So minimum net worth of probably $25 million. And you may not know what that is. You may be, I don't have anybody. Well, you probably do. But a business of 20 or more growing, the CEO of a company, okay, if you got CEOs, it's an incredible time that they can spend with David and that time. It's just an interview is what it is. You learn about his family, his business, et cetera. So what unique venues, meeting places does the organization have for major donors? What are y'all doing differently than other people, right, to raise money, okay? And what I would say is you don't have to spend a lot of money to raise a lot of money unless you're going to do a major event like I just saw with Chris Tomlin's deal, who was in here yesterday. They raised $10 million at their event. But you got to have access to get the people in the room to do something like that. So we would suggest you have more face-to-face or salon kind of meetings where you're coming together with 5 to 7 couples. Donor Advised Fund, Donors Private Foundation. So these are, this is kind of what you're looking at. That's it for session 2. All right, can you get me on session 3? Yes. That's, appreciate you asking that question. So how do you prospect, right, for new donors? Who likes to get new donors? Everybody. The number one place I would be spending my time in your city, in Memphis, would be meeting all the financial advisors. Invite them in, feed them lunch, okay? And what you want to ask those people is, look, the reason I have you here is I know that the largest transfer of wealth is happening, right? I also know that 90% of all the wealth in America is tied up in appreciated assets. But what I don't know is I don't know the people in the city. And guess who the first line of defense is before someone sells a business is? Who knows first? Their financial advisor. Before their CPA. Okay? Before their CPA. So the best place to find is to also know if Mr. Jones is a major donor, what you need to do is have underneath that, who is his CPA, who's his financial advisor, who are his attorneys, and put that in your database, okay? Really important to know. But yes, who we work with for leads and how most of our leads come to the signatory are basically three places, CPAs, RIAs, as we call them, registered investment advisors, okay, Raymond James, whoever they may be, and they're all over the place, okay? There's, Ron Blue Associates, you name it. Just go meet with them because they're going to want to talk to you Because here's the benefit that they have. And the third one, I'm sorry, were CPAs, investment advisors, and then ministries. So our job is to help you guys understand there's a lot of revenue sitting on the table. How many of y'all read the book, Acres of Diamonds? Go get it, okay? It's tiny. Acres of Diamonds. It's awesome. It is a great book, okay? And when you read it, you'll be like, oh, I get it. There's plenty. God's given you everything you need. It's already there, but you got to look in your own backyard. The number one thing I would hear when I was consulting is, we're going to do a major donor campaign. Well, the first thing the president or CEO would say, well, we don't have any. I'm like, really? Well, who do you have? And then we'd go find out about these people, and there's all kinds of major donors. They just didn't know. They didn't do the research to find out. They didn't know the questions to ask, okay? And so we help them do that. So back to your question, your investment advisors, here's why this works for them, okay? Number one, they need to know you as a ministry and just say, look, I just want you to be aware of what we do in the community. And you may have people that are generous and at the end of the year need to give away money, okay? And I would love for you to be able to lead by saying, we're in a sector of children like no other, and we're the people that do it best in your community. Can you help me identify who are some people I need to talk to? You'll leave there with a list of new prospects like you won't believe. Because every one of those investment advisors that do financial planning, certified financial planners, they'll do what happened with you. Somebody told them, their financial planner, you got money you need to give away. Okay, why not be on that list? Okay, and then the other thing that happens is, let's say that they identify one person that's a client of yours. Say, okay, you may know someone that's their client, and say, you know what, if they sold their business, this happened in Nashville recently. Raymond James guy called me, and the guy sold a company for about $75 million. And he picked up all of that money that was in the business that went to his donor advised fund to manage. And it was about $10 million on that one. So imagine you as a financial advisor, and you get, the guy's never given him that much money to manage, but he sells his company and it goes in the DAF. Now he's got $10 million he can manage. That just made him $100,000 a year in new revenue. That's going to probably keep going. That's a pretty good deal for the advisor, right? So, yes, your advisors are really critical.
But if it's a piece of property, is it sold or is it?
Depends on what they want to do with it. If it's income producing and they want the income to go into the DAF to give away, they can do that. But typically it is sold, okay? Most of the time it's going to be sold. As you asked a minute ago that you didn't know, and you've been doing this for 20 years, you've been exposed. But when someone gives a closely held share of a company into a donor advised fund, okay, and the company hasn't sold, okay, but they're planning on it being sold, okay, and they may be like, I know it's going to sell. Well, not every time does that happen, right? And so sometimes that gift is made. We hold those shares. They've already gotten their deduction, okay, and then that company doesn't sell. Well, they have 5 years. To be able to either, the company has to sell, or they have to claim a charity and say, here's where I want it to go before the 5 years, or they buy it back. But if they don't do one of those things, there's a 266% tax on that that's levied by the IRS. Okay? So we have to be aware. I don't want that business owner that gave us that gift to say, oh my goodness, we slipped up and didn't catch that. And now they're paying a huge, but they have to give. But when they make the decision, either sell it, or it either sells in 5 years, they claim a charity, and then that buys them another 5 years for it to grow and sell. Okay, so sometimes they'll get that deduction, and that it's not liquid yet. Okay, so, but typically most of the stuff we do, they're going to liquidate within 60 days of when we receive the gift. It's a great question. So the other thing, the reason I mentioned the single charity fund is a lot of times a ministry would say, well, if I have them give all the money to you, is that money that would have come to us? Has anybody had that thought? Yeah. Okay, then I want to say this kindly. Okay, the pie is not this big. It's a big pie. Okay, it's a huge pie. But when they gift that money to their DAF, they're probably already giving to other than your organization. And as I mentioned yesterday, what we find is if you introduce a donor to this concept and they do a gift of assets into their DAF, and it may be someone that doesn't even know, doesn't even give to you. You may meet somebody and share it, and they may say, thanks for so much. You're going to typically get 40% of whatever the size is of that gift because you introduce them to this, because you've helped them save so much money. Okay? That makes sense? So let's go through, look a couple of these slides. Just to reiterate, what's our mission and our vision? It's to write the last check to solve the world's greatest problems and to inspire and facilitate revolutionary biblical generosity. You've already seen this. Let's see a little bit about how it works. Okay, would that be of interest? This may answer some technical questions. Okay, so donor advised fund, how it works. You have a donor and their resources. So this could be cash, this could be real estate, this could be any kind of business or commercial, residential, this could be a business that's growing stocks, etc. Okay? The donor contributes the cash or assets and receives an income tax deduction, goes into its gifted the asset or sold or held for income. So one of the two. It's either sold or held for income. And then recommended grants proceeds to your favorite charity. That's how simple this is. Okay? And if they're your donors, you're not going to have to worry about not getting the money. They're already given. They're just going to give more. Okay? So, how gifting real estate works. Okay? And these are just a couple of examples. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on all these because these can get pretty boring. Real estate gifting process. So you have the property, it's the gift sold or income from the property to us. Okay, so it goes to the signatory, all right, goes there, and then what happens is you receive income tax deduction here to the donor, and then back they donate the property or portion of interest to the signatory. And then you give from the proceeds and you get the tax savings for the charity. Make sense? Any questions on that? Okay. Example one, real estate sale, two scenarios. A property owner wants to give commercial property valued at $1 million to charity. Scenario one, the owner sells the property, and we talked a little bit about this, but you can see it with your eyes here. The owner sells the property and then gives the proceeds to charity. That's scenario one. Scenario two is the owner donates property to the signatory before it's sold. So what's the difference? The sell the property of $1 million, scenario one. So they got their property, they sell it, they got cash, and they're like, oh, I'm going to give it away. Good deal. Okay? The sales proceeds were $1 million. Okay? The taxes they're going to pay, 25%. We just basically used 25% on the cap gains there. Of the total taxes they're going to pay, $250,000. Their income tax deduction is $315,000, okay? That's what they're going to get for their income tax deduction. And they avoid a capital gains tax of zero. Total tax benefit, $315,000, okay? That's what they get for doing it that way. The charity gets $750,000. Looks like a pretty good deal. Okay, this is 100% cash gift after the sale. So remember these numbers, total tax $315, charity $750. Or scenario two, 100% of the gift, you give it before the sale. So you say, I'm gonna gift this property and then sell it. So the sale of the property, first you're gonna make the gift of the real estate on the right-hand side to the signatory donor advised fund, $1 million, and drops down, the charity gets $1 million. Number one, that's a lot better deal. That's $250,000 more. The sale proceeds of zero, okay, taxes zero, income tax deduction $420,000 versus $300-something, avoided capital gains tax of $250,000, total tax benefit of versus $300-something thousand, now it's $670,000. Now, if you can save somebody on a $1 million gift, $670,000 in taxes, is that a good deal versus $350,000 before? You see the difference? Let me back it up. Okay? $315,000 tax benefit. That's selling or giving, selling and then giving. And the charity got $750,000 versus the charity getting $1 million and they saved
$670,000. Yep.
If they need to. So if there were more income, that's correct. That's correct. No, we can't save the money on that. If they gift it before, correct. Yeah, that's correct. So that is another advantage. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up because we would help them get that sold, and there's no cost there. Correct.
So where is your fee in this?
There is no fee.
So this is no fee.
So that's hard to believe, isn't it?
I've asked it twice.
I know, I love this guy because he's like, there's a catch here somewhere. I love people that look for a catch. Here's the deal. We left fees when we started the signatory. First, we left the fee of the cost of the transaction. So on a $1 million gift, if you did this with someone else, they're going to charge you 5%, okay, of $1 million, $50,000. And that's just part of it. And they'll tell you the first meeting, here's how we work. There's a 5% fee on any complex gift because we bring our attorneys. We have 7 attorneys now, okay? They're not cheap to hire 7 attorneys that are working full-time doing stuff. We've got our CPAs that do this kind of stuff, okay? And so that was a huge part of our income, but we're a ministry. And what we figured was, we would rather run after the money that's in the Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard. Remember me telling you guys there's like $25 billion sitting in the secular DAF world, and we believe we can capture at least $5 billion of that in the next 12, 18 months. Well, we have other pools of funds that the money gets invested to where we get an income from. So we've just kind of skinned the cat differently. So, no, there's no fees, and if the money sits in there and it earns, so our biblically responsible pools of funds, I don't know if y'all have ever heard of this, ask your advisor, this is a tip for you, if you want to invest in biblically responsible investments. There's a company called Eventide. They're out of Boston, okay? They're brilliant, 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 and their returns have been extraordinary, okay? And so they actually sell those pools of funds to investment advisors, and you can ask, but they've been outperforming the non-biblically responsible pools for the most part. And so you can put, and so that doesn't go into casinos or gambling or tobacco or alcohol. These are a lot of biotech things and things that are working. So when we have money go into those pools, then Eventide sends us money back, because we're generating revenue for them. Make sense? Yeah.
If again, you may have already mentioned this, I missed one of the sessions, but if that donation came straight to our ministry, the tax benefit to the donor is the same, the donor is charged, is that correct?
That's correct. Yep, because we're 501c3, you're a 501c3, that's correct. The difference is, have you done them before? Do you have an attorney? What are the costs going to be? Is there a headache in that? Where are you going to invest the money, et cetera, et cetera? Now, can you take them? Yeah. The difference is you want to find out if you're getting 100% of that. What you don't want to have happen is a guy give $1 million of real estate. But what if they don't want to sell it yet? What if they want to hold it? Now you got to handle all of the trends, and you're not probably not set up to handle the rental income or having the people that do the, so we have people that do property management too, all over the country. So if that property needs management, we can bring that to the table. So what we're trying to do is get you the money without any of the headache. But if it's a business interest, then you wouldn't be able to take that gift. Yep, good question. Here, income tax, that's basically was the rate they were at. That's figured on basically 42% their tax rate. It depends on their income. Yeah, we just basically, let's see what it said. Let's see if it's on here. Most of these are figured at about 40% and 25% of cap gains, just to round them out, okay? Because that's what they would be paid. So let me go forward. So again, this is that same scenario. Sell, then give. Taxes were $250, charity $750. Give 100%, then sell, okay? Scenario two is you pay zero taxes, $1 million to the charity, $250,000 less in taxes, $250,000 more to the charity, $670,000 combined capital gains and tax avoided, and income tax saved. So if you've ever, how many of y'all have the book called Giving It All Away and Getting It Back Again? If you don't have that book, it's called Giving It All Away and Getting It Back Again. It's the story of David Green and Bill High, our founder. But it's the story of David. And it goes through how, it's amazing, because he said this, you know, the government allows you to give and get a deduction on 50%, 60 if it's all cash. And if you use the tax strategies wise, you can give it all, you're going to basically get it back again in taxes, tax savings, okay? That's a pretty big difference. So you don't want to miss out on somebody's sale, because it really cost them a lot of money, didn't it? So if you care about the donor, this is information that's important. Same thing with publicly traded stock, comparing $50,000 fair market value with a basis of 20. So they paid 20,000, they've got a fair market value of 50,000. So if they sell, then give, taxes on this $50,000 is $7,500, okay? Charity's gonna get 42,500, income tax saved is 15,000, total tax benefit 15,725. If they give and then sell it, they're going to get a $50,000 gift to the charity versus $42,500. The income tax savings are at $18,500, and the total tax benefit was $26,000. So that's a pretty good deal on a $50,000 gift. The tax savings are real dollars, right? When you're not paying capital gains, that's money you get to keep. It's money the business owner gets to keep. So you get a larger tax deduction, you rebalancing investment portfolio, and there's no cost with the DAF or for most charities. So these are just some basic examples. Gifts of business interest, privately owned business entities. Now, these are all different, okay? So you don't need to know this, but if just for clarity purposes, if there's an S corporation or an LLC or C corp or partnerships, they're all taxed differently. And so what happens is if you can find that out, it's interesting. You don't need to know the tax laws. But what happens is an S corporation, if we take that gift, an S corp is going to have a 15% tax on that. Y'all have heard of excess business holding tax. Anybody ever heard of that? That's what happens if you do business as a charity, but you have another business that sells cars. Like you're in the children's home business, right? And you make money off of selling cars, right? There's a tax there because it's a non-related business income, right? So you pay tax on that. Well, we do too, but we've got a separate trust that we use, and we can avoid the 15% tax by how we manage this with a separate trust. We put all these S-corps in a different trust, and the donor's going to basically only pay 7%. Any other DAF sponsor is going to pay 15%. So that's just another nuance that we have. For what we're doing. So these are the gifts of business interest strategies you give and sell or give and hold. gifts of privately owned business interests, business sale case study. There's three scenarios here. And I don't want to lose you on all this, but again, I told you the dog business, snack business is big business. So it's taxed as a partnership, which is different than a C corp or an S corp. The business is valued at $10 million and is about to be sold. Scenario one, no charitable gift. Scenario two, the owners sell the business and then give 20% of the proceeds. Remember, it's $10 million, so that's a $2 million gift. Scenario three, the owners donate 20% before the sale and before selling their business interest, okay? Selling the business. Scenario one, remember, no sale. LLC valued at $10 million, sale proceeds of $10 million. Family here at $7.5 million. Taxes $2.5 million, charity zero. Okay? Scenario two, they gift 20%. So they kept all the money there, right? Now this is where you can say, you know, you might be able to give money and save money, right? It's pretty interesting. Because you remember what they paid in taxes? $2.5 million. Okay, just remember that. Sales proceeds 10. Family now gets 6.3. Taxes are 2.1. So they avoided the cap gains, and their total tax savings is 375. So they went from 7.5. They get 6.3. Not a bad day. They've saved taxes, and then the charity actually got 1.5 million. And now, yeah, they missed out on a little bit, but they've given a lot of money away and saved some taxes in the product. That's just 20%. And then that's if they sold, then gave. Now, this is if they give, then give it away, and then make the gift. Okay, $10 million sales proceeds. Okay, $8 million because they made a gift of 20% on the right. Signatory donor, they give 20% there, so they get $8 million. Family's going to keep 6.4. Taxes are 1.55. The charity gets $2 million, and now their tax savings are $950,000. That's enormous, isn't it? It's incredible. So you give more by giving before you sell. So this was the family scenario, okay? Sell, then give. It was 6.3. Taxes where they are, 2.12. Charity got 1.5, or you give 20% before you sell of the $10 million. They get more money by making a 20% gift, right? The charity, there's going to be more to the family, which is $75,000 more than over here. Their taxes they've saved is $575,000 in taxes, and there's more to charity by $500,000. So the whole idea of sharing these examples are when you gift before you sell, you're not just helping yourself. The biggest thing you need to take out of here is you're helping the donor. You're helping the donor, okay? And I said it yesterday, who does the good deed? We're all in business, in ministry, because the donor does the good deed, right? The donor does the good deed. Without them making the gift, there's not much there. So give more by giving before you sell. $500,000 more to support the causes you care about. That's a pretty big deal. And if you have a donor that's in that scenario and they love what you're doing, they're going to love making an additional $500,000, okay? They're going to love it. So we could walk through some more of these. These are long-term holds where you maximize annual charitable deductions, charitable income tax deduction. 60%. These are the amount of dollars that you can give away. So how do you maximize charitable income tax? Remember, there's 50% combo of AGI of 30% with you give an asset plus 20 or 60% total if you give all cash. 30% AGI deduction for non-cash. And we need to be asking for that. We need to be out asking for that. Minimize income tax liability on an annual basis and over their lifetimes. There's more of those. If you want to see them, I'll show them. But let me just stop and wrap this up. Those slides are fun for me. I don't know if y'all like those, but I love those slides. And you can get those on our website. Some of them are in here. You can go look up any kind of gift, whether it's real estate, whether it's a sale of an asset like an S Corp, C Corp, it doesn't matter. There's all these examples, okay, that are already there for you. Actually, you can go on our website and there's a calculator, like you can look at your interest rate calculators for mortgages. And we can plug in how much the gift is, how much tax savings they're going to get, et cetera, et cetera. So those are some simple tools. Let me just stop and answer any last questions.
Just an available resource for this information for like our development directors who might not be here and might go back and try to explain it and mess it all up.
Yeah.
How can I share this information?
He can call. They can call. We can do a Zoom call. Matter of fact, we can invite them. We do a devotion every Monday morning, and we do a sales call every Monday morning with our people. And whenever we have, like next Monday, for instance, we'll have one of our attorneys. We'll come on, and he'll just walk through some basic stuff. So there's different ways we can share that information. The message back to your development directors should be this. We do annual giving. We do direct mail. We probably do some social media stuff, some crowdfunding. We do estate planning. We have a major gift program. But those are all geared around the 2% pond. There's a 90% pond over here that we haven't had a strategy for and haven't been informed on, but I just got informed about it. And we need to figure out how to at least start the ball rolling. Okay, the first step you could take would simply be opening up your own donor advised fund for the charity. Okay, would you recommend that's a good idea? Yeah. And in terms of donor advised funds or taxes?
And the legislation.
Yeah, that question came up yesterday, and it's a great question, and we follow it. Our attorneys follow that like a hawk. And there's been a lot of noise, to be quite honest. There's been a lot of noise around donor advised funds because the money that sits in most of the secular DAFs, okay, they only gift out about 15%. Some of them don't even do that, okay? And so they're truly using that as a tax. Yeah. Now, the problem is a lot of those people are the major donors in those parties, okay? And so that's where they're getting their political gifts as well. And so I kind of doubt they're going to go after their net major donors. This has been around since 1914, and the law's not changed. It's really fascinating because we can... There are really no, it's crazy because as a donor advised fund, we have no governing laws against how we even invest our money. So we actually have money that we invest in alternative investments, okay, if you know what those are. So a donor can take his money and actually invest it in for-profit companies and earn income over there. Okay, so there's really unique things. We've got athletes, for instance, that have put money in their donor advised fund, okay, and then they will gift that to a charity. When they retire, they say, look, I'm going to gift you this money, and then I'm going to come to work for you, and so they then use that money to pay for their salary. Fascinating way to do it. So there's a lot of unique ways to allow people to use charitable dollars to benefit the charity and other things. How would I structure a development department at a nonprofit? I would look for, if I were hiring someone, I'd look for one of those halftime guys that's been a business owner, okay? And I would ask him to focus his energy on going and telling his story about how he sold his business and the taxes that it saved him, okay, to his business, because he's got all those relationships already. And then I would tell him, and you may say, you've got to be kidding. We're part of ECFA too, okay? But I would pay him based on his results of what he brought in. Now, we're not going to call it a commission. We're going to call it, I'm going to give you a very small salary, but we're going to bonus you based on some structure, okay? And you give that guy the ability to go make some good money, but he's going to return you incredible amounts of money. I'd structure it so differently than having a nonprofit guy that goes out and does the same thing we've been doing for years and years. Yeah. I'll take any questions outside the door if you need to. So y'all enjoy lunch. Thank you for your time. I hope it was valuable to you.